Thanks very much. Much appreciated. Quite surprised to be asked, but I'm very honoured.
It's been a wonderful career spent in football, and I suppose you've represented Tasmania. You've just done it all. When it comes to the game, you've coached. You've done all sorts of things. Mike, when did it all start for you? When did you start to get really interested in playing this great world game?
I was about 8 years old, and my dad took me to a local game in Dartford in Kent. That's where we were living at the time. It wasn't a particularly big game. It was Dartford Reserves against Arsenal's third team in the old Metropolitan League. And I just watched this game and thought, I want to play this. And that was it, really. From then on, I just wanted to play football.
What was it? What in particular excited you? Because I know you're a prolific goal scorer. Was it the fact that you could just get in the box and you could you wanted to score? Was it that, or was it just something else?
I think it was just the whole atmosphere of the game. I understand the game was different in those days, in that some of the tackles would never be countenanced today. I quite liked the physical side of it. And the whole game fascinated me. I didn't actually play until we moved to Cambridge and I was 10 years old and played for my primary school team. But I kicked a ball at any opportunity I could get. Just wanted to be involved in that in particular sport.
So who did you watch? Who did you look at and say, I think I want to model myself here, or was you just your own man?
I think mainly I was my own man. I didn't really consciously model myself on any particular player. As I got older, I guess because of my short stature, and I certainly wasn't the archetypal centre forward, particularly of the old days, I modelled myself somewhat on Jimmy Greaves, who played for Tottenham and England. And also, there were a couple of other players around at the same time. And once I started playing, I discovered I was quite good at scoring goals, so I realised that I couldn't score them with my head a lot, because obviously I was a lot shorter than most people. But if you gave the ball to me on the ground anywhere near goal, I was, just discovered that not only was I quite good at it, but I really loved doing it.
And as of now, I know that you're heavily involved in coaching, etc. Is goal scoring something that you can coach into a player, or is it just simply born with it, instinct, and see ball, kick ball, head ball?
I don't believe you can actually coach goal scorers. I never have. It's an instinct. Yes, you can coach strikers and you might make them better at scoring goals, but they have to have the instinct to get into positions where other players just won't go or don't think about going. You have to expect defenders to make mistakes and take advantage when they do. As I said, you can make them better at it, but you can't actually coach that instinct into them.
In October of 1968, you came to Australia. You played in Sydney with St George. Amazing. I think Frank Arock was there around at the time. 5 years with them, 168 games, 130 goals. That must have been a golden period of time for you, Mike.
Well, as a professional, that was the best time of my professional career, undoubtedly. I was lucky in that St George had had a bad season in 1968. My first season was 69, and they'd got a new coach, and as you say, it was Frank Harrop. So obviously he came with no preconceived notion, and I was lucky enough to make the team for the first league game of the season. We played a team called Yugle, a Yugoslav-founded team, and we beat them 11-1, and I scored 4, but a guy called George Yardley scored 6, and he'd come out of the Football League in England, although he was a Scot, and I was quite happy to play second fiddle to him, but as it turned out, he left after a few weeks, couldn't settle, and suddenly I was the man. And I ended up with 21 goals in 22 games that season. And so it all stemmed from that, really.
What was Frank Arock like?
A hard taskmaster, but very fair. Was prepared to, look after his players. If he thought a player was giving everything, he'd be happy to do whatever needed to be done for that guy. And some or other during that period. And, it, you know, he was just really good. And then when he left, he was replaced by Rally Rasic, who's the 74 World Cup coach.
Mm.
Different style, different... But again, definitely somebody who, if the player did the right thing, he'd do the right thing as well. And that makes a huge difference.
I get the feeling that you would thrive under that. John Warren was the man to advise you that you'd been selected to play for Australia. That did that come as a shock to you, or were you thinking, wow, I think I'm getting close?
No, I knew we'd played a grand final, again against Hugel, on a pitch where the ball floated for 90% of the game. Game should never have been played, really. But we lost, and they deserved to win that day because they adapted to the conditions better. And Rally was in the stand, and I knew that he was there looking at possible players for the 1970 World Tour. And I thought, oh, yeah, well, we gave it my best shot. We'll see what happens. Anyway, it was the following day. I got a phone call from Johnny Warren, and he said, you've been selected for the National Teams World Tour. And I really didn't believe it, and I sort of hinted to him in certain words that I won't use on a radio station. I thought maybe he was just pulling my leg, but he said, no, you'll get a telegram. That's how long ago it was, telegram. You'll get a telegram tomorrow, and it'll tell you what you need to do. And sure enough, the next day, I got a telegram and said, and I've still got it, actually. And just said, you've been selected for the World Tour. A letter follows to give you instructions as to what you need to do to get everything done. And I had to apply for citizenship. But at that stage, I hadn't gone round to that. And so it had to be, I had to go and get the forms for that, fill that out and send them off. It was a bit different in those days. You didn't have to go to any ceremony or just said, I'm here. I've been here for so long. Please give me citizenship. That arrived a couple of weeks later. And yes, I went on a tour around the world with a football team, which is my idea of heaven, obviously. The only issue was that I'd not long got engaged. We were getting married in January, and so my wife-to-be was left with all the preparations because we left in November, came back in December. Yeah, so it was a fairly hectic time, particularly for her.
How do you think you acquitted yourself playing for Australia, for the Socceroos?
I thought I did pretty well. Rally and the other coaches voted on players for each game, and over the whole tour, I ended up just being voted the fifth best player. So I can't have done too badly.
Hmm.
And I was the leading scorer. I scored 6 goals in 14 games that I played.
Yeah.
And that was so I ended up as the leading goal scorer. And I was part of the first Australian team to beat a European team in Europe. We beat Greece 3-1 in Athens. And the Greek papers have been saying, oh, Greece will win 7-0, 8-0, 10-0. And they got a bit of a shock.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, let's go now to how you found your way to the Burnie Spartans, then the Spartans and the Rovers sort of amalgamated to make Burnie United. But who approached you to come and play in Burnie?
Well, what happened was we were expecting our first child, and St George got a new coach called Mike Johnson, and he and I just didn't get on. And as I'd always played football for the enjoyment, not the money. The money's nice, but the enjoyment was much more important for me. We decided we'd up sticks and move to Tasmania, which is my wife's home state. And so we did. And my wife contacted her parents, and her mum rang the advocate and spoke to Barry Saltmarsh and said that I was coming, and did he know anybody who was involved with football, and as Barry was quite heavily involved with Spartans, he basically let them know, and Rovers found out as well. I've no idea how. And
it's Tasmania, you know.
Yeah, but at the time I didn't know.
Yeah.
And by the, I think, the second or third day I was there, both clubs sent people round to talk to me. I knew nothing about either club, obviously. And the reason I joined Spartans was they were the first ones to come. I said, yeah, well, I'll play for you next season. They asked if I was interested in coaching, and at that stage I thought, no, I just want to settle in here first and get myself organised. So I was approached by a guy called Kenny Worden, who was coaching Hobart Juventus at the time, and he offered me $3,000 for a season and said that they would fly me down or down to Hobart and back home again every weekend. But I said, look, seriously, thank you for the offer, but I've already given my word to Spartans that I'll play for them, and that means a lot to me. So fortunately, we stayed friends because I'd met him previously when I was in Sydney. But if I say I'm going to do something, unless something out of the ordinary happens, then I do it.
Mike, stick with us. We'll delve a little bit further into the Burnie experience with you. My very special guest on Where Are They Now is Mike Denton. Back shortly. Welcome back to the Sideline View. Michael Maney with you. My very special guest is Mike Denton, who a lot of football supporters will remember as a superb goal-kicking striker for Burnie United, and just played with the Socceroos 14 games and just one of the real stars and legends of the sport in this state. Mike, you were saying you'd just signed with the Burnie Spartans, and I think in your first season, you might have broken a goals record. I think Malcolm Newell had a goals record, I think, and you knocked that over. So you really started off getting into your stride quite early.
Yeah, I scored, I think off the top of my head, 56 goals that season. And to be honest, Malcolm Newell was one of the main people that helped me do that. We struck quite a good partnership. He was a talented player in his own right, and it was just, we just hit it off, and the goals just seemed to go in from all angles at times. But I really enjoyed it. And at that time, there were some more than decent players playing on the coast for Burnie, the two Burnie clubs, and Ulverston and Devonport. They were quality players. A lot of them, obviously, with English, Scottish backgrounds, but some real players, if they'd been in another state, would have probably played at a higher level. But it was fun.
Well, by default, Burnie Rovers ended up getting their man anyway, didn't they? Even though he didn't go to Spartans, there was an amalgamation between Spartans and Rovers, and that brought the two clubs together. What was that period of time like, Mike?
It was actually very interesting. It was the first time I'd ever been involved in an amalgamation of two clubs. Rovers was struggling a little bit for players, and I think Burnie was probably only big enough for one real club anyway. But there was a lot less animosity than I expected when it first got brought up, and it went fairly smoothly. And I think it was the right thing at the time. And the new club did pretty well to start with. I mean, I'd coached the Spartans first team the previous year, and we finished runners up in the Northern Championship, and there was a push to start state league. We, as an amalgamated club, we tried to get in, but we were knocked back. Not really sure of the reasons, but as in most sports, politics played a part. So we were still in the Northern Championship, and the next 2 years I coached Burnie United senior team, and we went 2 seasons undefeated in the league and lost one game, which was a cup semi-final. But once that was over and we got promoted to state league, and I decided I really wasn't that interested in coaching senior players. I would much rather coach young footballers. That way you see, hopefully, the improvement over a period of time. But it was a great experience, and I'm glad I had it, but I'm really glad that I went down a step, if you like, to coach kids.
And you represented Tasmania under John Grimsey, the coach?
Yes.
Must have been an honour?
Yeah, it was a great honour. It's always an honour. I mean, I'd played for New South Wales while I was in Sydney, quite a few games, but to be selected for any representative team is an honour. We played against Chinese People's Republic, who were on tour in Australia. We ended up losing 1-0, but we were pretty unlucky. We put up a good fight. We hit the bar a couple of times and went close on a few occasions, but in the end, they won 1-0. But then they played Australia a few days later in Sydney, and they only lost that 2-1 to Australia. So they weren't a team of mugs by any means. And so I think we put up a decent showing.
You met a technical analyst, I think his name's Les Bead, and that had an influence on you too, didn't it? Profound.
Well, yeah, it was. I was close to, I'd done a couple of coaching courses, and I was quite bored with the way kids were coached. Stood in lines and passed the ball backwards and forwards, and I thought, is this it? Because this has nothing to do with football. And Les came to Tasmania as the, well, what nowadays would be called technical director.
Yeah.
He knew me from Sydney. We hadn't actually met, but he was with Canterbury. And so he knew of me. And we sort of got talking, and he brought in a thing called Game Sense, which really caught my imagination and quite a few others. And really, the fact that I'm still coaching now is 99% down to Les. Great man, ended up as the National Coach Development Officer for Community Coaches, now retired, but absolutely owe him everything as far as my coaching career is concerned.
In 2017, you made the decision to move to Western Australia. It must have been a big call for you to actually do that. So what was the strategy behind that?
Family. All our children are here, grandchildren. So we talked about it. We talked about it for a while. And we made the decision that we should do it. And then 3 weeks before we were due to leave, my wife got diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Which sort of made us run around a bit. And, I mean, she is an ex-cancer nurse. She ran the cancer unit in the Burnie Hospital for 23 years. So she knew what she was in for. She managed to get one treatment in before we left. Then she flew over with our eldest son, Andrew, who got compassionate leave from the Navy. And he and my wife flew back business class, who from Tassie to here, and I drove across with the help of a guy called Darren Purton, and that's really, fortunately now she's, I won't say well on the way to recovery, she's been cancer-free for about 3 years now.
That's great.
But the treatment has affected her, it's knocked her around a bit, but she's still with us, and that's the main thing as far as we're both concerned. But there, that was, and I was very lucky when I got here. My daughter, Rebecca, had put a notice in on Facebook in one of the area's sort of chat page. And quite a few clubs were interested, but the club that showed the most interest and the most put the most effort into getting me was a club called Auburn Grove United, which is about 15 minutes drive from where we're living in Baldivis. And I met the president, Matt Longdon, and he said, oh, well, when you arrive, let me know and we'll organise a meeting. So I did that, went to the meeting with what I thought would just be him, and the whole committee were there. And we had quite a good chat, and they were a brand new club. They'd only started up the season before I arrived, so their first season was 2017. Because we arrived in September once the season was over. And basically I've been there ever since. I'm the club coach coordinator, which is like a bit like a technical director, but it's not quite the same, but it's close. It was only a junior club. We have an over 35s team now, and most of those either coach at the club or have kids at the club, so and they're doing okay.
Yeah.
I've loved every minute of it. I mean, that first year or first 18 months, that was what kept me sane, because I spent a lot of time travelling backwards and forwards and falling into the hospital.
Yeah.
And she was in hospital for about 4 weeks towards the end of it when she'd had her own stem cells transplanted and she was really sick. They were just amazing, and they still are. And they've been brilliant.
Mike, it's been a life well spent in football, as I said at the start. Do you have any regrets? Do you feel that maybe more games with Australia, if you could have managed it? Is there anything that you feel that you left that you haven't finished?
I think there'll be things teams that I've left when I die. But as far as playing for Australia is concerned, it would have been nice, but I cracked a disc in my back just after, the following season. After I came back, it took me a while to regain my form. So other people got in and they did well. They went to the 74 World Cup. I can't really complain. And I've got an Australian cap to show that a lot of people would give their eye teeth for.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have any real complaints. Of course, it's always nice to play for your country, whether it be the country you were born in or your adopted country. I'm very proud of it. Again, it would have been nice to have played more games, but that wasn't to be. It would be nice to do a lot of things. It would be nice to be a millionaire, but I'm not that either.
But you've given something back to the game, Mike, and I think you've got to be very proud of that. It's been a great involvement, but you've been prepared to give something back. And working with kids, I mean, obviously you love that. That's where it all starts, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And as for giving something back, yeah, that was my reason for doing it originally. I mean, both our sons played and my daughter played as well, and I coached all three of them at one time or another. But I thought I was giving back, but I've discovered that the more you give back, the more you get out. So it's like a circle, really. I can never really catch up because this game has been so good to me. I've met so many good people. I've met a few not so good ones, of course, but the vast majority of the people I've met involvement in this game have been wonderful people. That I'm still in touch with people that I played with for in the UK, guys I played with at school. It's just amazing how much you get out of, I guess, any sport. But for me, this is the sport that I always wanted to play, and I've done well. I didn't get rich because when I played professionally, they didn't pay the sort of money they pay now.
You might have been able to afford an operation to that back of yours or something to just keep you on the park.
I continued to play. I played until my 50s. I played futsal till I was in the 60s and discovered I had atrial fibrillation. So I had to go and have a procedure done in Melbourne for that. But I'm 76.
Yep.
I'm still coaching three or four nights a week and can't really ask more. It's just been a fantastic life. I think, as I said, there will be stuff I leave undone when I finally take my last breath. I'll think, I should have done this or I wish I'd done that. But I'll do what I can.
Well, you continue to do it, Mike, because I know that when I was a young kid living in Devonport, pick up the newspaper, look at the sports results, I could just see this M. Denton 3, M. Denton 4. M. Denton would score every single week, and I just think to myself, wow, this guy must be something else. And it's been a big honour for me to chat to you because of the just your outstanding career just on the northwest coast alone. So thanks heaps for picking up the phone and having a chat. Really appreciate it, and all the very best for your continued involvement in the world game. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Michael. I really appreciate it. And it's an honour for me always to be asked to reminisce, and I can do it for days if you want.
Thanks, mate.